everyone, it's Carol, and welcome to episode 40 of Speakerman Speaks Retail, where we navigate retail from now to next in every episode. I'm here to help retail-focused companies land big B2B programs and cut through all the noise through my latest retail trajectories. These are themes that I'm constantly creating, connecting, and mapping across categories, borders, business models, and touch points so you can do something about it. Last week, we got an important retail barometer reading that retail watchers eagerly anticipate. I'm talking about the 1-2 punch of earnings announcements from Walmart and Target for the second quarter. As usual, they came in one day apart and Walmart led the charge. But this isn't just about two mega retailers duking it out for dominance. It's really a bellwether for the entire industry. So, with back to school wrapping up and as we careen into Halloween, Thanksgiving, and the make or break holiday shopping season, I thought this was a perfect time to compare what these big guys have in common, where they're veering in different directions, and what it might signal for everybody else going into the end of the year. So let's break it down. Target's profitability was down 90% year over year. Ouch. But they also posted a 2.6% increase in sales, which was just enough to keep their 21-quarter growth streak going. Customer traffic was up 2.7%. Walmart's comp sales were up 7.2% year over year. E-commerce sales leaped 12%, which is a pretty impressive number for a mature business. Walmart International racked up a 5.7% gain, and Sam's Club was the rock star with a 13.9% increase in comp sales. Overall revenue was up 8.4%. Now, this is the number everybody's talking about because Walmart did beat analysts' expectations. But I think the general consensus is that in typically humble Walmart fashion, they definitely underpromised and overdelivered for the quarter. But in the pain department, inflation and supply chain snags were the great unifiers. And I think we all know that Walmart and Target aren't alone here. There's a lot more to the story, though, than just these sales numbers, particularly when you pull the camera back from that Battle of the Giants bout. Because I'm looking at Target and Walmart as leading indicators, and in that spirit, I pulled together some takeaways, trajectories, and report translations that surpass the obvious observations. I just wrapped up a quick take on all of this in my latest video for Market Scale, but we're going to take a deeper dive here. First of all, mix matters. And here I'm talking about category mix. In fact, I love the term that Walmart coined and used several times in its report when they kept referring to mix shifts. Not to be confused with misfits, even though they're kind of synonymous in this case, because Walmart cited their unfavorable mix shifts as the culprit for a 132 basis point margin dip. Walmart said that a heavier mix of sales in food and consumables put pressure on their overall margins. Translation, low-margin groceries are great for driving traffic. But gee, does everybody have to load up and leave? What about those yoga pants over there? Sales in higher-margin discretionary categories like apparel were soft and inventory levels were uncomfortably high. But since the report was issued, a cascade of softlines retailers like Abercrombie, Victoria's Secret, Macy's, and Nordstrom have also acknowledged that they're in the same boat. The thing is, these retailers don't have the level of diversification that Walmart and, to a lesser degree, Target do, so they have a lot less wiggle room. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. Target's gross profit margin made up 21.5% of sales, compared to 30.4% a year ago. I mentioned that Walmart always goes first with these earnings reports, and I have to say that Target's take on its inventory pileup sounded a lot like a direct response to Walmart. Target took pains to specifically call out that mix wasn't a big factor in its margin performance, saying that mix accounted for 10 basis points of pressure. Target talked about upticks in what it called frequency categories. But of course, low-margin groceries, one of those categories. Food and beverage drives traffic, and that boosts higher-margin categories like apparel and home that Target's always been known for. Target blamed its margin miss on markdowns in categories like home furnishings that were on fire last year, but have definitely cooled down since. Target's CEO said that their guest preference for individual categories changed dramatically, but that it hasn't affected their overall preference for Target. So basically for Target, a mix shift by any other name still equated to plenty of markdowns, but it's all good because shoppers really like Target. They really, really like Target. This too, and time shall pass. Retailers are still selling stuff and shoppers are still buying stuff. but what they're buying makes a big impact on profitability. And thanks to those pesky mix shifts, past performance is in no way indicative of future results, and increasingly, it can't be used for future planning. The word unprecedented is still the elephant in the room. So category mix is part of the story, but the other mix at work is between digital and physical. As I just teed up, for Target and Walmart, grocery is supposed to be the lure that drives more traffic, which in turn is supposed to drive sales in higher margin categories. In other words, when you're buying those snacks, they're hoping you're also checking out the sweatpants. That segues into my second takeaway, and it's a new retail trajectory that I just added to my library this month. Convenience can kill. This is the next evolution of my trajectory, the convenience conundrum, which calls out the fact that choice and convenience are synonymous in retail these days. And retailers have built arsenals of convenience options because they risk losing customers to a competitor who will meet them where they are if they don't. So lots of retailers, definitely Walmart and Target, have built out those arsenals. Click and collect, home delivery, curbside pickup, and so on, and much of it's focused on grocery. In fact, Target touted the hundreds of what it called fulfillment remodels that are designed to facilitate all those convenience options. But here's the problem, and it's twofold. First, as more shoppers have gotten used to buying groceries online, they're not in stores as often, browsing and checking out the other merch. They're doing hit-and-run shopping in lower-margin categories, checking things off the list and then getting on with their day. Oh, sure, sometimes a suggestion might pop up on the screen prompting you to add something you bought last time, but it's probably just another low-margin grocery item. Forget the cilantro? Yeah, sure, add it. The second problem is that retailers' digital environments still aren't matching that in-store browsing dynamic. The grocery business is still operating in silos. That means you're probably not going to get a suggestion to buy a fondue pot when you buy cheese. So retailers now have another conundrum on their hands. How do they make that same impulse buying happen online? How can you get shoppers to cross the digital aisle without slowing down the seamless and fast grocery buying experience that shoppers demand? In the meantime, all those convenience options are squashing the frequent store visits that grocery used to drive, but not so much now. So yeah, grocery sales are up, but conversion to other categories is on the wane. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing here, and it's yet another factor driving those mix shifts that Walmart talks about. Thankfully, retailers have a few more tricks up their sleeves, and that brings me to my next takeaway. I'm going to swing back to my trusty trajectory and power mantra, diversify or die. Now, I hope you're not tired of me talking about it, because it just keeps getting validated, most recently by Target and Walmart in their reports. Business model diversification is retail's growth engine of the future, and it's a mighty hedge against product-based headwinds like inflation and supply chain snags. Category, format, and geographic diversification are really just the extra sprinkles on top. But overall, as a global multi-format retailer with a bustling online marketplace, Walmart wins the diversification prize. And when it comes to that business model diversification, Walmart was downright giddy about its ad business. And for good reason. It was up 30% for the quarter. In the report, Walmart's EVP and CFO, John Rainey, said, "I can't remember a business with the same margin structure." So I've devoted entire presentations and podcast episodes to how retailers have gone mad for ads, and it's only going to accelerate from here. Walmart cited its online marketplace, fulfillment, advertising, financial services, and healthcare as a global opportunity beyond product. Talk about diversification, not to mention their white label services like Go Local that it makes available to other retailers. I began forecasting the rise in what I call private services a few years ago, and Walmart is definitely on the forefront with services like Go Local. Walmart's newly minted CFO, who I mentioned just a minute ago, summed it up by saying that despite these short-term challenges, they continue to diversify their income streams. Increasingly, services, solutions, and ad slinging in particular are going to save retailers' assets. And that's definitely true for more retailers going forward as they build out their in-house ad shops. Walmart recently added Paramount Essentials subscriptions to its Walmart Plus program, and just a couple of days ago, they threw in a points-based rewards program. Here's what's happening. Just like Amazon, Walmart gets those dollars coming and going. Shoppers pay to get the loyalty benefits, From there, Walmart monetizes shopper subscriptions through its ad platforms as suppliers pony up to gain access to those shoppers. All the cool retailers are doing it, including Target. But I thought it was interesting that as developed as Target's ad platform is, they really were cagier about its impact. They cited a 15% growth in what they called the other revenue line. But in true Target fashion, they were much more outspoken about their brand partnerships and entertainment hookups, like their partnership with Marvel, their exclusives with Lego, Disney shops, co-branded Apple spaces, and their Ulta Shoppin' Shops, which have the potential to turn Target into a real beauty destination. That's important because beauty is one of the more profitable frequency categories at Target. It can drive traffic and move the needle. So Target has definitely evolved beyond its pioneering, but frankly played out designer fashion forays, and I think that's a very good thing. Non-product forays into data monetization, including ad sales, entertainment, and content, will hedge against some of those headwinds that are inherent with selling products. And if all goes according to plan, it'll add to the bottom line from there. So diversify or die is still my main mantra. And as part of that, the shift to solutions in retail is in full swing. I could go in so many directions for my next takeaway, but one dynamic is flying so far under the radar, and it ties into so many other elements that are more talked about, that I had to surface it. We've talked about how excess inventory was a real problem for Target and Walmart. Walmart CEO Doug McMillon was quick to point out that the merch that was left over was perfectly good stuff. There was just way too much of it. He went on to say that they canceled billions of dollars in orders to help mitigate the pileup. Target CEO Brian Cornell took pains to explain what he called a bold effort to take care of its inventory glut. He was touting how they basically gobbled up all their spinach all at once by taking markdowns and partnering with suppliers to reduce commitments rather than letting it drag out and drag down future performance. That's worth calling out, though, because between Walmart and Target, billions of dollars worth of pain was dealt out to suppliers. Plenty of suppliers will be reeling going into the holiday season, so it really will be make or break time. But here's the thing. Excess inventory also compromises newness. Now, that's a word that pops up all the time from Target, and increasingly more from Walmart, too. Target CEO said that had they not made those bold efforts, it would have hampered their ability to present the new and fresh items that customers expect from Target, those that highlight newness and support growth. So my next takeaway is that newness ain't nothing. Target made those bold moves because its entire brand promise hinges on the new, constant infusions of new brands and new products, and getting them discovered in stores. So appearances still matter, and excessive musty inventory compromises all of that, and the risk just wasn't worth it. I've been talking a lot about the private brand palooza that's ramped up in retail, where retailers are doubling down on private and proprietary brands, or what Target likes to call owned brands. Stay with me here because it ties into this need for newness. Both retailers made a point of how their private brands gave them more wiggle room on price and a way to provide value to budget-challenged shoppers. Walmart's private brand growth doubled compared to the first quarter. Target talked about how its built-out good, better, best private brand portfolio allows it to hit multiple shopper segments and basically meet guests where they are on the budget spectrum. By the way, Target's private brand portfolio delivers more than $30 billion in annual sales, including 12 brands that now generate more than $1 billion each. What does that have to do with inventory? Target's favorite term tells the story: owned brands. One of the few downsides to private brands is that when you brand it, you own it. It's awfully hard to get rid of, and you don't want your brands bopping around outside your borders in the off-price market. Desperate times called for desperate measures, and private brands were a part of the story. But barring another round of miscalculations in the holiday season, Walmart and Target should now be in a much better position after taking those measures. Out with the old and in with the newness. So what have we learned? Overall sales numbers don't tell the whole story. Getting the mix right is what it's all about. Those of you who provide tools that help with those calibrations, it's time to make your play. Diversification in its many forms is more critical to retail success than ever before. As I always say, retailers are no longer just places that sell stuff. They're platforms, and these platforms have lots of moving parts these days. Retailers may have solved the convenience conundrum, but they definitely haven't solved the digitally driven mix shifts or cracked the code on digital exploration and incremental opportunities. There's a lot of innovation on the scene, a lot of third-party partners that are trying to help retailers with this, but they're just not there yet. And finally, any barriers to newness have to be knocked down, or full-price selling gets snarled and the brand takes a beating. I'm going to keep tracking the action as things heat up going into the end of the year, so stay tuned. In the meantime, thank you for listening in today. And speaking of cracking codes, I've got a super cool interview coming up in the next episode that breaks on September 13th. I'll be talking with a pricing, inventory planning, and customer engagement guru. We'll all learn a lot, so tune in. In the meantime, I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions, ideas, or stories to share. You can ping me at carol@speakermanretail.com or hit my site at speakermanretail.com to check out more insights, subscribe to my updates, and get the latest on more events and other happenings. And if you'd like to look at booking your event with me, please contact my assistant at team@speakermanretail.com and he can compare schedules with you. My live event speaking and workshop schedule is packed for September and October, so I hope to have the opportunity to meet with some of you in person. If you like what you're hearing, though, please do like, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. See you next time, and happy selling.